Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, to put it mildly, Uber had a rough 2017. The founder and CEO of the ride-hailing company was forced to resign. There were numerous allegations of sexual harassment. And then came the news that Uber had a data breach that involved millions of people's personal information, and the company had kept that a secret. So, in June, Uber hired Harvard Business School academic Frances Fry to try to help fix its corporate culture. And Fry herself calls the situation a, quote, hot mess. Asma Khalid leads Bostonomics, WBUR's business and innovation team, and she recently caught up with Fry to talk about this. Hi there, Asma.
Hey, Deb.
So why did Frances Fry want this job at Uber? It doesn't seem like that's an easy one.
No, and Deb, she admits that this is hard. A part of it is, she told me, just logistically difficult. She commutes every week between Cambridge and California because her family still lives here in Massachusetts. But she told me that she really likes surfacing problems. She likes fixing cultures, and she's actually a big believer that essentially every single company doesn't have static culture, that it's always flexible and moving. And so no place in her mind is really theoretically beyond repair. I mean, this is kind of her thing. She's built a career off of changing organizational behavior. She was, in fact, an operations professor at Harvard.
And what was the environment like at Uber when she started there in June?
So the company was kind of the pariah of Silicon Valley. Let me have Frances Fry explain.
I would say that the morale was low. Here was my evidence of it, that I heard from many, many people that if they got into a car that was being driven by an Uber driver, they wouldn't admit that they worked for Uber.
Ouch.
Right? You just don't even want to say. And so she told me she's done something kind of small. She started wearing an Uber t-shirt every day around the office, and she just wanted to inspire people to essentially feel proud enough of the company that they don't feel like they're ashamed and need to hide this. And, you know, Deb, I want to be clear, right? Like, a lot of people will make moral judgments, I think, about the business concept of Uber itself, you know, that they make a profit off of drivers who are not necessarily their employees. But Frances's job is not really about that aspect of Uber. She's just much more in the business of going into a company and cleaning out their culture, really opening up their closets and trying to figure out what secrets were hidden there and how you can essentially fix some of those problems.
Mm-hmm. And how is she trying to do that and counter this reputation that Uber does have mm-hmm. of sort of, I guess, in a nutshell, trying to bypass regulations?
Yep. And you know, she, in fact, did tell me that there were some folks, she said, at the company who made decisions of that sort. In her mind, a lot of those people are no longer at the company. And so she partly thinks that, you know, that it gives, I guess, the company the freedom to kind of move on in a different direction. She told me that she came up with three really major recommendations that she believes will dramatically change the culture. So, number one, she wants the senior team to work like a team. It sounds like a kind of minor, maybe, improvement, but she said that the way things were working before is that essentially each individual kind of manager had a one-on-one relationship with the former CEO. And that might be great for speed, for getting things done really quickly, but it was not good for quality. You essentially had a lot of do-overs. So she just wants essentially the senior team to work in cooperation, not to have silos. Recommendation number two is that she wants to train effective managers. She told me that Uber asked for the staff to send them emails about the company's culture, and this is what they realized.
There were, I think, more than 3,000 emails that were collected from people who were asked to comment on the culture. Every one of those that was negative, and it was quite a lot of them, almost every one of them had to do with an interaction with their manager.
Wow. Yeah,
almost every negative email involved a manager interaction. And she says part of this is that the company just had undertrained managers.
Really severely undertrained managers. These folks had been promoted at such a fast rate because of the unprecedented growth, and they weren't hiring from the outside. So you'd get put into a place of manager for the first time, and then before you know it, you're managing managers. And then you're managing managers of managers. I mean, just put out of your depth.
And, you know, part of this is what happens, right, when you have this hyper growth in a company like Uber had. And she thinks it is fixable, but they're not there yet. I mean, she told me part of what makes it difficult is Uber's just such a large company. They have 15,000 employees, and among those 15,000 are 3,000 managers. So, Deb, just real quick, the last recommendation she has is that she wants to clarify the strategy of a company. She said that the former CEO had all this strategy in his head, but not everybody knew what it was. And so as a result, you had all these folks kind of beating to a slightly different strategic drummer. She's hoping that the company can kind of develop its long-term strategy in 2018. That's the goal.
An ambitious goal. All ambitious goals.
It is. It is. And Deb, you know, Frances is confident that she can change the culture at Uber. And in part, she says she's done this thing before working at Harvard.
Harvard was born before the country. So I know it's hard to change Uber. I've been at Harvard. So I'm undaunted by changing anything.
Like a legacy institution.
Oh, my gosh. There's no more legacy than here. And I've worked with older institutions in other countries. But here's what I know. You need a super-duper careful diagnosis that sheds all of your own internal biases. And if we can get to a diagnosis, I know we can get a prescription.
And so, Deb, you know, she says that there are always going to be skeptics, and there were skeptics when she tried to change the culture at Harvard Business School.
And what did she exactly do at Harvard, Asma?
So, you know, Deb, for years, Harvard Business School had seen a gender gap, both among its students and its faculty.
So I think that we had a longstanding acceptance that there was an achievement gap and a satisfaction gap between men and women. Men had higher grades, and men had higher self-reported satisfaction. And I think it had existed for so long that I think folks just had come to accept the rationales.
But Deb, she told me that she was not convinced that this was necessarily a permanent situation, right, where a bunch of the students sort of felt like they were academically not achieving as much, nor were they as satisfied with the program. And she was actually in charge of the required curriculum. So she joined with some other HBS administrators, and they went about, you know, essentially making these systematic changes, changes that she says meant that within essentially 1 year, all the gender gaps among students had dissolved. Then they started to focus on the faculty, and that, you know, has not been as easy. The most recent statistics show that of all HBS faculty, 199 are men, 67 are women. So still quite a gap there. And she told me that women were not climbing the ranks as quickly as often as their male counterparts were.
Women weren't being promoted as fast as men. So then you have to ask yourself a really hard truth. Are we making biased decisions, or are men more prepared than women? I think one of the unique ways I come after this is I am undaunted by either answer. It doesn't bother me which answer it is, because I know how to solve either.
So what was the problem?
Yeah. So she told me a lot of people assume that disparity is because of bias, right? It's kind of uncomfortable to sometimes think that maybe women are not as prepared. And so, you know, you'll see it a lot of companies. They have this unconscious bias training. And she's like, is it necessarily helpful if that's not the problem? Long story short, what they discovered at HBS is that it actually appeared women were less prepared.
Men were, on average, getting higher teaching ratings than women. You look at what was
by the students.
By the students. So then you're like, holy cow, are the students making biased decisions? Yeah. Double click on that, double click, double click. It turns out if a woman came to HBS and taught well, she remained teaching well. Same for a man. If a man came in the beginning and struggled, he got better. If a woman came in and struggled, not as likely she'd get better. So now we've pinpointed where the problem is.
And Deb, then they said they realized that the way they were trying to fix the problem wasn't good either. So the standard way is that they would make professors watch videos of themselves teaching. They realized that this was not helping the women at all. So administrators decided instead of making women watch these videos, they would give the women kind of a quick debrief, you know, essentially a coaching session. This is what went well. This is what didn't went well. And long story short, she says that through these coaching sessions, women, at least for now, seem to be improving at the same rate as men.
So these lessons that Frances Fry learned at HBS, have they then helped her at Uber?
In theory, that's what she's hoping for. I mean, in some ways, she did try this huge gender makeover at HBS. I think Uber is a really large organization, right, with a lot of disparate parts. But she's trying, she told me, to take over one key lesson, which is the idea that culture should not and cannot be homogenous, and that that's a kind of dangerous way of thinking. She told me that one really important aspect of culture in her mind is diversity, and not just diversity in this buzzword sense of a view.
Just having diverse people usually lets us, you know, feel like it's victory, and it's not. We have to explicitly manage for the inclusivity. I think that by being inclusive of the diversity, not looking for how are men and women the same, but it's how are they different, and it's having the courage to treat people differently, and where they are different and where they need their difference to be celebrated, that's the key to all of this.
So, Deb, the example she gave me is that on the second day of her job at HBS, when she was in administration, she changed the maternity leave policy. And she said to me that this was something she had been hearing about for years from people, that they would either wait until they got tenure to become pregnant, or it was just sort of a big hiccup in the process. To her, that was a simple way of recognizing that there are differences, and maybe as a workplace culture, we should acknowledge that. And she said that's the kind of lesson she wants to take over to Uber. And she said it's really not wise to think that there's the HBS way of doing things or the Uber way of doing things. If there is, she says the company's in trouble.
Okay. Asma Khalid, she leads Bostonomics, WBUR's business and innovation team. Asma, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.